that only loosely corresponded to some of what could actually be found inside. I turned the pages, hoping I would stumble across something, but most of the pages just looked like gibberish. I stared at the words I couldn't understand.
I dargen vod er hin sid argoch, dato duch I kolum, troiloch a thrauch ev, buruch I rumen hun, vele kafkan vod, hin ruin de chai amdano, hin ruin aigesio.
Something jumped out at me, a word I recognized from a quote tacked on the wall of my parents' study. Pete et invenies. Seek, and you shall find. Invenies. Find.
Ut invenias quod abest, expedi nodum, torque et convolve. Elice hoc vinculum. Ut inveniam, quod desidero, quod peto.
I tore through the pages of my mom's Latin dictionary, scrawling the words in the back as I translated them. The words of the cast stared back at me. To find what is missing, unravel the tie, twist and wind. Cast this bind, so I may find that which I yearn for, that which I seek.
I found something!
Lena sat up, peering over my shoulder. What are you talking about? She sounded less than convinced. I held my chicken scratch handwriting up for her to read.
I translated this. It seems like you use it to find something.
Lena leaned closer, checking my translation. Her eyes widened.
It's a locator cast.
That sounds like something we can use to find the answer, so we can figure out how to undo the curse.
Lena pulled the book into her lap, staring at the page. She pointed to the other cast above it.
That's the same cast in Welsh, I think.
But can it help us?
I don't know. We don't even really know what we're looking for.
She frowned, suddenly less enthusiastic.
Besides, spoken casting isn't as easy as it looks, and I've never done it before. Things can go wrong.
Was she kidding?
Things can go wrong? Things worse than turning into a dark caster on your 16th birthday?
I grabbed the book out of her hands, burning the daisies off the tips of the gloves.
Why did we dig up a grave to find this thing and waste weeks trying to figure out what it says if we aren't even going to try?
I held the book up until one of the gloves started to smoke. Lena shook her head.
Give me that.
She took a deep breath.
Okay, I'll try, but I have no idea what will happen. This isn't usually how I do it.
It?
You know, the way I use my powers, all the natural stuff. I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it? It's supposed to be natural. I don't even know what I'm doing half the time.
Okay, so this time you do, and I'll help. What do I need to do, draw a circle, light some candles?
Lena rolled her eyes.
How about sit over there?
She pointed to a spot a few feet away.
Just in case.
I was expecting a little bit more preparation, but I was just a mortal. What did I know? I ignored Lena's order to put some distance between myself and her first spoken cast, but I did take a few steps back. Lena held the book in one hand, which was a feat in itself because it was incredibly heavy, and took a deep breath. Her eyes ran slowly down the page as she read,
"Unravel the tie. Twist and wind. Cast this bind, so I may find that which I yearn for."
She looked up and spoke the last line, clear and strong.
"That which I seek."
For a second, nothing happened. The clouds still lingered overhead. The air was still cold. It didn't work. Lena shrugged her shoulders. I knew she was thinking the same thing. Until we both heard it, a sound like a rush of air echoing through a tunnel. The tree behind me caught fire. It actually ignited from the bottom up. Flames raced up the trunk, roaring, spreading out to every branch.
I had never seen anything catch fire that quickly. The wood started to smoke immediately. I pulled Lena away from the fire, coughing.
Are you okay?
She was coughing, too. I pushed her black curls away from her face.
Well, obviously that didn't work, unless you were looking to toast some really big marshmallows.
Lena smiled weakly. I told you things could go wrong.
That's an understatement.
We stared up at the burning cypress. That was 5 days and counting. 4 days and counting, the storm clouds rolled in, and Lena stayed home sick. The Santee flooded and the roads were washed out north of town. The local news chalked it up to global warming, but I knew better. As I sat in Algebra 2, Lena and I argued about the book, which wasn't going to help my grade on the pop quiz.
Forget about the book, Ethan. I'm sick of it. It's not helping.
We can't forget about it. It's your only chance. You heard your uncle. It's the most powerful book in the Castor world.
It's also the book that cursed my whole family.
Don't give up. The answer has to be somewhere in the book.
I was losing her. She wouldn't listen to me, and I was about to fail my third quiz of the semester.
Great. By the way, can you simplify 7x minus 2 times 4x minus 6?
I knew she could. She was already in trig.
What does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. But I'm failing this quiz.
She sighed. A Castor girlfriend had some perks. 3 days and counting. The mudslide started and the upper field slid into the gym. The squad wouldn't be cheering for a while, and the disciplinary committee was going to have to find a new place to hold their witch trials. Lena was still not back in school, but she was in my head the whole day. Her voice grew smaller until I could barely hear it over the chaos of another day at Jackson High. I sat alone in the lunchroom. I couldn't eat. For the first time since I met Lena, I looked at everyone around me and felt a pang of, I don't know, something.
What was it? Jealousy?
Their lives were so simple, so easy. Their problems were mortal-sized, tiny, the way mine used to be. I caught Emily looking at me. Savannah bounced into Emily's lap, and with Savannah came the familiar snarl. It wasn't jealousy. I wouldn't trade Lena for any of this. I couldn't imagine going back to such a tiny life. 2 days and counting. Lena wouldn't even speak to me. Half the roof blew off the DAR headquarters when the high winds hit. The member registries Mrs. Lincoln and Mrs. Asher had spent years compiling, the family trees going back to the Mayflower and the Revolution, were destroyed. The Gatlin County Patriots would have to prove their blood was better than the rest of ours all over again. I drove to Ravenwood on my way to school and banged on the door as hard as I could. Lena wouldn't come out of the house. When I finally got her to open the door, I could see why. Ravenwood had changed again. Inside, it looked like a maximum security prison. The windows had bars and the walls were smooth concrete, except for in the front hallway where they were orange and padded. Lena was wearing an orange jumpsuit with the numbers 0211, her birthday, stamped on it, her hands covered in writing. She looked kind of cool, actually, her messy black hair falling around her. She could even make a prison jumpsuit look good.
What's going on, El?
She followed my gaze over her shoulder.
Oh, this? Nothing. It's a joke.
I didn't know Macon joked.
She pulled at a loose string on her sleeve.
He doesn't. It's my joke.
Since when can you control Ravenwood?
She shrugged. I just woke up yesterday and this is what it looked like. It must have been on my mind. The house just listened, I guess.
Let's get out of here. Prison is only making you more depressed.
I could be Ridley in 2 days.
It's pretty depressing.
She shook her head sadly and sat down on the edge of the veranda. I sat down next to her. She didn't look at me, but instead stared down at her prison-issue white sneakers. I wondered how she knew what prison sneakers looked like.
Shoelaces. You got that part wrong.
What?
I pointed. They take away your shoelaces in real prisons.
You have to let go, Ethan. It's over. I can't stop my birthday from coming, or the curse. I can't pretend I'm a regular girl anymore. I'm not like Savannah Snow or Emily Asher. I'm a caster.
I picked up a handful of pebbles from the bottom step of the veranda and chucked one as far as I could.
I won't say goodbye, Elle. I can't.
She took a pebble from my hand and threw it. Her fingers brushed against mine, and I felt the tiny pulse of warmth. I tried to memorize it.
You won't have a chance to. I'll be gone, and I won't even remember I cared about you.
I was stubborn. I couldn't listen to this. This time, the pebble hit a tree.
Nothing will change the way we feel about each other. That's the one thing I know for sure.
Ethan, I may not even be capable of feeling.
I don't believe that.
I flung the rest of the stones out into the overgrown yard. I don't know where they landed. They didn't make a sound. But I stared out that way as hard as I could, swallowing the lump in my throat. Lena reached out toward me, then hesitated. She put her hand down without so much as a touch.
Don't be mad at me. I didn't ask for any of this.
That's when I snapped.
Maybe not, but what if tomorrow is our last day together? And I could be spending it with you, but instead you're here, moping around like you're already claimed.
She got up.
You don't understand.
I heard the door slam behind me as she went back into the house, her cell block. Whatever. I hadn't had a girlfriend before, so I wasn't prepared to deal with all this. I didn't even know what to call it, especially not with a caster girl. Not having a better idea of what to do, I stood up, gave up, and drove back to school. Late, as usual.
24 hours and counting. A low-pressure system settled over Gatlin. You couldn't tell if it was going to snow or hail, but the skies didn't look right. Today, anything could happen. I looked out the window during history and saw what looked like some kind of funeral procession, only for a funeral that hadn't happened yet. It was Macon Ravenwood's hearse, followed by 7 black Lincoln town cars. They drove past Jackson High as they made their way through town and out to Ravenwood. Nobody was listening to Mr. Lee drone on about the upcoming reenactment of the Battle of Honey Hill, not the most well-known of Civil War battles, but it was the one the people of Gatlin County were most proud of.
In 1864, Sherman ordered Union Major General John Hatch and his troops to cut off the Charleston and Savannah Railroad to keep Confederate soldiers from interfering with his march to the sea. But due to several navigational miscalculations, the Union forces were delayed.
He smiled proudly, writing navigational miscalculations out on the chalkboard. Okay, the Union was stupid. We got it. That was the point of the Battle of Honey Hill, the point of the war between the states as it had been taught to all of us since kindergarten. Neglecting, of course, the fact that the Union had actually won the war. In Gatlin, everyone kind of talked about it like a gentlemanly concession on the part of the more gentlemanly South. The South had taken, historically speaking, the high road, at least according to Mr. Lee. But today, nobody was looking at the board. Everyone was staring out the windows. The black Lincolns followed the hearse in a convoy down the street, behind the athletic field. Now that Macon had come out, so to speak, he seemed to enjoy making a spectacle of himself. For a guy who only came out at night, he managed to command a lot of attention.
I felt a kick in my shin. Link was hunched over the desk, so Mr. Lee couldn't see his face.
Dude, who do you think is in all those cars?
Mr. Lincoln, would you like to tell us what happened next? Especially since your father will be commanding the cavalry tomorrow?
Mr. Lee was staring at us with his arms crossed. Link pretended to cough. Link's dad, a brow-beaten shell of a man, had the honor of commanding the cavalry in the reenactment since Big Earl Eaton died last year, which was the only way a reenactor ever advanced in rank. Someone had to die. It would have been a big deal in Savannah Snow's family. Link? He wasn't too big on the whole living history scene.
Let's see, Mr. Lee. Wait, I got it. We, won the battle and lost the war, or was it the other way around? 'Cause around here, it's hard to tell sometimes.
Mr. Lee ignored Link's comment. He probably hung the stars and bars, the Confederate flag, in front of his house all year round. I mean, his double wide.
Mr. Lincoln, by the time Hatch and the Federals reached Honey Hill, Colonel Colcock,
the class snickered, while Mr. Lee glared.
Yes, that was his real name. The colonel and his brigade of Confederate soldiers and militia formed an impassable battery of 7 guns across the road.
How many times were we going to have to hear about the 7 guns? You would have thought it was the miracle of the fish and the loaves. Link looked back to me, nodding in the direction of Maine.
Well?
I think it's Lena's family. They were supposed to be coming in for her birthday.
Yeah, Ridley said something about that.
You guys still hanging out?
I was almost afraid to ask.
Yeah, man. Can you keep a secret?
Haven't I always?
Link pulled up the sleeve of his Ramones t-shirt to reveal a tattoo of what looked like an anime version of Ridley, complete with the Catholic schoolgirl mini and knee socks. I was hoping Link's fascination with Ridley had lost some steam, but deep down, I knew the truth. Link would only get over Ridley when she was good and done with him, if she didn't make him jump headlong off a cliff first. And even then, he might not get over her.
I got it over Christmas break. Pretty cool, huh? Ridley drew it for me herself. She's a killer artist.
The killer part, I believed. What could I say? You tattooed a comic book version of a dark caster on your arm, who, by the way, has you under some kind of love spell, and who also happens to be your girlfriend?
Your mom is gonna freak when she sees that.
She's not gonna see it. My sleeve covers it, and we have a new privacy rule in my house. She has to knock.
Before she barges in and does whatever she wants?
Yeah, well, at least she knocks first.
I hope so, for your sake.
Anyway, Ridley and I have a surprise for Lena. Don't tell Rid I told you, she'll kill me. But we're throwing Lena a party tomorrow, in that big field at Ravenwood.
That better be a joke.
Surprise!
He actually looked excited, as if this party was ever going to happen, as if Lena would ever go, or Macon would ever let her.
What were you thinking? Lena would hate that. She and Ridley don't even speak.
That's on Lena, man. She should get over it. They're family.
I knew he was under the influence, a Ridley-fied zombie, but he was still pissing me off.
You don't know what you're talking about. Just stay out of it. Trust me.
He opened a Slim Jim and took a bite.
Whatever, man. We were just trying to do something nice for Lena. It's not like she has that many people willing to throw her a party.
All the more reason not to have one. No one would come.
He grinned and stuffed the rest of the Slim Jim into his mouth.
Everyone will come. Everyone's already coming. At least, that's what Rid says.
Ridley. Of course. She'd have the whole damn town following her around like the Pied Piper at the suck of her first lollipop. That didn't seem to be Link's understanding of the situation.
My band, the Holy Rollers, are gonna play for the very first time ever.
The what?
My new band. I started it, you know, at church camp,
I didn't want to know anything else about what had happened over winter break. I was just happy he had made it back in one piece. Mr. Lee banged on the blackboard for emphasis, drawing a big number 8 in chalk.
In the end, Hatch could not move the Confederates and withdrew his forces, with a count of 89 dead and 629 wounded. The Confederates won the battle, only losing 8 men. And that, Mr. Lee pounded proudly on the number 8, is why you all will be joining me at the Living History reenactment of the Battle of Honey Hill tomorrow.
Living history. That's what people like Mr. Lee called Civil War reenactments, and they weren't kidding. Every detail was accurate, from the uniforms to the ammunition to the position of the soldiers on the battlefield. Link grinned at me, all Slim Jim.
Don't tell Lena. We want her to be surprised. It's like her birthday present from the two of us.
I just stared at him. I thought about Lena in her dark mood and her orange prison jumpsuit. Then Link's no doubt terrible band, a Jackson High party, Emily Asher and Savannah Snow, the Fallen Angels, Ridley, and Ravenwood, not to mention Honey Hill blowing up in the distance. All under the disapproving eye of Macon, Lena's other crazy relatives, and the mother who was trying to kill her. And the dog that allowed Macon to see every move we made. The bell rang. Surprise wouldn't even begin to describe how she would feel, and I was the one who'd have to tell her.
Don't forget to sign in when you arrive at the reenactment. You don't get credit if you don't sign in. And remember to stay inside the ropes of the safe zone. Getting shot won't get you an A in this class,
Mr. Lee called as we filed out the door. Right about now, getting shot didn't seem like the worst thing in the world. Civil War reenactments are a seriously strange phenomenon, and the reenactment of the Battle of Honey Hill was no exception. Who would actually be interested in dressing up in what looked like really sweaty wool Halloween costumes? Who wanted to run around shooting antique firearms so unstable they had been known to blow people's limbs off when fired? Which is, by the way, how Big Earl Eaton had died. Who cared about recreating battles that happened in a war that took place almost 150 years ago and that, in fact, the South didn't actually win? Who would do that? In Gatlin, and most of the South, the answer would be your doctor, your lawyer, your preacher, the guy who fixes your car, and the one who delivers your mail, most likely your dad, all your uncles and cousins, your history teacher, especially if you happen to have Mr. Lee, and most definitely the guy who owns the gun shop over in town. Come the second week of February, rain or shine, Gatlin thought about, talked about, and fussed about nothing but the reenactment of the Battle of Honey Hill. Honey Hill was our battle. I don't know how they decided that, but I'm pretty sure it had something to do with the 7 guns. People in town spent weeks preparing for Honey Hill. Now that it was down to the last minute, Confederate uniforms were being steamed and pressed all over the county, the smell of warm wool wafting through the air. Whitworth rifles were cleaned and swords polished, and half the men in town had spent last weekend at Buford Radford's place making homemade ammunition, because his wife didn't mind the smell. The widows were busy washing sheets and freezing pies for the hundreds of tourists descending on the town to witness living history. The members of the DAR had spent weeks preparing for their version of the reenactment, the Southern Heritage Tours, and their daughters had spent 2 Saturdays baking pound cakes to serve after the tours. This was particularly amusing because the DAR members, including Mrs. Lincoln, conducted these tours in period dress. They squeezed into girdles and layers of petticoats that made them look like sausages about to burst from their casings. And they weren't the only ones. Their daughters, including Savannah and Emily, the future generation of the DAR, had to putter around the historic plantation houses dressed like characters from Little House on the Prairie. The tour had always started at the DAR headquarters, since it was the second oldest house in Gatlin. I wondered if the roof would be fixed in time. I couldn't help imagining all those women wandering around the Gatlin Historical Society, pointing out starburst quilt patterns above the hundreds of castor scrolls and documents awaiting the next bank holiday below. But the DAR weren't the only ones to get into the act. The war between the states was often referred to as the First Modern War. But if you took a walk around Gatlin the week before the reenactment, there was nothing modern-looking about it. Every Civil War relic in town was on display, from horse-drawn wagons to howitzers, which any preschooler in town could tell you were artillery cannons resting on a set of old wagon wheels. The sisters even dragged out their original Confederate flag and tacked it up on their front door after I refused to hang it on the porch for them. Even though it was all for show, that's where I drew the line. There was a big parade the day before the reenactment, which gave the reenactors an opportunity to march through town in full regalia in front of all the tourists, because the next day they'd be so covered in smoke and dirt that no one would notice the shiny brass buttons on their authentic shell jackets. After the parade, there was a huge festival, with a pig pick, a kissing booth, and an old-fashioned pie sale. Amma spent days baking. Outside of the county fair, this was her biggest pie show, and her biggest opportunity to claim victory over her enemies. Her pies were always bestsellers, which drove Mrs. Lincoln and Mrs. Snow crazy. Amma's primary motivation for all that baking in the first place. There was nothing she liked better than showing up the women of the DAR and rubbing their noses in their second-rate pies. So every year when the second week of February rolled around, life as we knew it ceased to exist, and we all found ourselves back at the Battle of Honey Hill, circa 1864. This year was no exception, with one peculiar addition. This year, as pickups pulled into town, towing double-barreled cannons and horse trailers, any self-respecting cavalry reenactor owned his own horse, different preparations were also underway for a different battle. Only this one didn't begin at the second oldest house in Gatlin, but the oldest. There were howitzers, and then there were howitzers. This battle wasn't concerned with guns and horses, but that didn't make it any less of a battle. To be honest, it was the only real battle in town. As for the 8 casualties of Honey Hill, I couldn't really compare. I was only worried about one. Because if I lost her, I would be lost too. So forget the Battle of Honey Hill. To me, this felt more like D-Day. February 11th. Suite 16.
Leave me alone. I told all of you, there's nothing you can do.
Lena's voice woke me from a few hours of fitful sleep. I pulled on my jeans and a gray t-shirt without even stopping to think about it. About anything other than this. Day one. We could stop waiting for the end to come. The end was here. Not with a bang but a whimper, not with a bang but a whimper, not with a bang but a whimper. Lena was losing it, and it was barely daylight. The book, damn, I'd forgotten it. I ran back up into my room, 2 stairs at a time. I reached up to the top shelf of my closet where I'd hidden it, bracing myself for the scorching that went along with touching a castor book. Only, it didn't happen. Because it wasn't there. The Book of Moons, our book, was gone. We needed that book, today of all days, but Lena's voice was pounding in my head. This is the way the world ends, not with a bang but a whimper. Lena reciting T.S. Eliot was not a good sign. I grabbed the keys to the Volvo and ran. The sun was rising as I drove down Dove Street. Greenbrier, or the only empty field in Gatlin to everyone else in town, making it the location of the Battle of Honey Hill, was beginning to come to life, too. The funny thing was, I couldn't even hear the artillery outside my car window because of the artillery going off in my head. By the time I ran up the steps of Ravenwood's veranda, Boo was waiting for me, barking. Larkin was on the steps, too, leaning against one of the pillars. He was in his leather jacket, playing with the snake that curled and uncurled its way around his arm. First it was his arm, then it was a snake. He shifted idly between shapes, like a dealer shuffling a deck of cards. The sight of it caught me off guard for a second. That and the way he made Boo bark. Come to think of it, I couldn't tell if Boo was barking at me or Larkin. Boo belonged to Macon, and Macon and I hadn't exactly left things on speaking terms.
Hey, Larkin.
He nodded, disinterested. It was cold, and a puff of breath crept out of his mouth, as if from an imaginary cigarette. The puff stretched out into a circle that became a tiny white snake, which then bit into its own tail, devouring itself until it disappeared.
I wouldn't go in there if I was you. Your girlfriend is a little, how should I put it,
venomous? The snake curved its length around his neck, then became the collar of his leather jacket. Aunt Dell flung the door open.
Finally, we've been waiting for you. Lena's in her room and she won't let any of us in.
I looked at Aunt Dell, so muddled, her scarf dangling lopsidedly from one shoulder, her glasses askew, even her off-kilter gray bun coming unraveled from its twist. I leaned in to give her a hug. She smelled like one of the sisters' antique cabinets, full of lavender sachets and old linens, handed down from sister to sister. Reese and Ryan stood behind her like a mournful family in a grim hospital lobby, waiting for bad news. Again, Ravenwood seemed more attuned to Lena and her mood than to Macon's, or maybe this was a mood they shared. Macon was nowhere to be found, so I couldn't tell. If you could imagine the color of anger, it had been splashed over every wall. Rage, or something equally dense and seething, was hanging from every chandelier, resentment woven into thick carpets padding the room, hatred flickering underneath every lampshade. The floor was bathed in a creeping shadow, a particular darkness that had seeped up into the walls, and right now was rolling across my Converse so I almost couldn't see them. Absolute darkness. I can't say for sure how the room looked. I was too distracted by how it felt, and it felt pretty rank. I took a tentative step onto the grand flying staircase that led up to Lena's bedroom. I'd gone up those stairs 100 times before. It's not like I didn't know where they went. And yet somehow, today felt different. Aunt Dell looked at Reese and Ryan, following behind me, as if I was leading the way into an unknown war front. When I stepped onto the second stair, the whole house shook. The 1,000 candles of the ancient chandelier swinging over my head shuddered and dripped wax down onto my face. I winced and jerked back. Without warning, the stairway curled up beneath my feet and snapped underneath me, tossing me back onto my butt, sending me skidding halfway across the polished floors of the entry hall. Reese and Aunt Dell made it out of the way, but I took poor Ryan with me, like a bowling ball hitting the pins at County Line Lanes. I stood up and shouted up the stairs.
Lena Duquesne, if you sick those stairs on me again, I'm gonna report you to the disciplinary committee myself.
I took a step onto the first stair, and then the second. Nothing happened.
I will call Mr. Hollingsworth and personally testify that you're a dangerous lunatic.
I double-jumped the stairs all the way up to the first landing.
Because if you do that to me again, you will be. You hear me?
Then I heard it, her voice uncurling in my mind.
You don't understand. I know you're scared, El, but shutting everyone out isn't going to make things any better. Go away. No. I mean it, Ethan. Go away. I don't want anything to happen to you. I can't.
Now I was standing at her bedroom door, leaning my cheek against the cold white wood of the paneling. I wanted to be with her, as close to her as I could get without having another heart attack.
and if this was as near as she would let me get, it was enough for me, for now. Are you there, Ethan?
I'm right here.
I'm afraid.
I know, Elle.
I don't want you to get hurt.
I won't.
Ethan, I don't want to leave you.
You won't.
What if I do?
I'll wait for you.
Even if I'm dark?
Even if you're very, very dark.
She pulled the door open and pulled me inside. Music was blasting. I knew the song. This was an angry, almost metal version of it, but I recognized it all the same. 16 moons, 16 years, 16 of your deepest fears, 16 times you dreamed my tears, falling, falling through the years. It looked like she had been crying all night. She probably had. When I touched her face, I saw it was still striped with tears. I held her in my arms, and we swayed while the song played on.
16 moons, 16 years, sound of thunder in your ears. 16 miles before she nears. 16 feet, what 16 fears.
Over her shoulder, I could see her room was in shambles. Plaster on her walls was cracked and falling, and her dresser was overturned, the way a thief tosses a room during a break-in. Her windows were shattered. Without the glass, the small metal panes looked like prison bars from some ancient castle. The prisoner clung to me as the melody wrapped around us. Still, the music didn't stop.
16 moons, 16 years, 16 times.
The last time I was here, the ceiling had been almost completely covered in words detailing Lena's innermost thoughts. But now, every surface of the room was covered in her distinctive black handwriting. The edges of the ceiling now read, "Loneliness is holding the one you love when you know you might never hold him again. The walls, even lost in the darkness, my heart will find you. The door jams. The soul dies at the hand of the one who carries it. The mirrors. If I could find a place to run away, hidden safely, I would be there today. Even the dresser was marred with phrases. The darkest daylight finds me here. Those who wait are always watching. And the one that seemed to say it all, how do you escape from yourself?" I could see her story in the words, hear it in the music.
16 moons, 16 years, the claiming moon, the hour hears. In these cages, darkness clears, powers burn, what fire sears.
Then the electric guitar slowed, and I heard a new verse, the end of the song. Finally, something had an ending. I tried to put the earth and fire and water and wind dreams out of my head as I listened.
16 moon, 16 year, now has come the day you fear. Clay will be clay, shed blood, shed tear. Moon or sun, destroy.
The guitar died out, and now we were standing in silence.
"What do you think?"
She put her hand on my lips. She couldn't bear to talk about it. She was as raw as I had ever seen her. A cold breeze was blowing past her, surrounding her, and exhaling out through the open door behind me. I didn't know if her cheeks were red from the cold or from her tears, and I didn't ask. We fell onto her bed and curled into one ball, until it would have been hard to sort out whose limbs were whose. We weren't kissing, but it was like we were. We were closer than I'd ever realized two people could be.
I guess this was what it felt like to love someone and feel like you had lost them, even when you were still holding them in your arms. Lena was shivering. I could feel every rib, every bone in her body, and her movements seemed involuntary. I untangled my arm from around her neck and twisted so I could grab the pieced quilt from the foot of her bed and pull it up over us. She burrowed into my chest, and I pulled the quilt higher. Now it was over our heads, and we were in a dark little cave together, the two of us. The cave became warm with our breath. I kissed her cold mouth, and she kissed me back. The current between us intensified, and she nuzzled her way into the hollow of my neck.
"Do you think we can stay like this forever, Ethan?"
"We can do whatever you want. It's your birthday."
I felt her stiffen in my arms.
"Don't remind me."
"But I brought you a present."
She held up the cover to let just a crack of light in.
"You did? I told you not to."
"Since when did I ever listen to anything you say? Besides, Link says if a girl says not to get her a birthday present, that means get me a birthday present and make sure it's jewelry."
"That's not true of all girls."
"Okay, forget it."
She let the quilt drop, then snuggled back into my arms.
"Is it?"
"What?"
"Jewelry."
"I thought you didn't want a present."
"Just curious."
I smiled to myself and pulled down the quilt. The cold air hit us both at the same time, and I quickly pulled a small box out of my jeans and dove back under the covers. I lifted the quilt up so she could see the box.
"Put it down. It's too cold."
I let it fall, and we were surrounded by darkness again. The box began to glow with green light, and I could make out Lena's slender fingertips as she pulled off the silver ribbon. The glow spread, warm and bright, until her face was softly lit across from mine.
"That's a new one."
I smiled at her in the green light.
"I know. It's been happening ever since I woke up this morning. Whatever I think just sort of happens."
"Not bad."
She stared at the box wistfully, as if she was waiting as long as she could to open it. It occurred to me that this was possibly the only present Lena would get today, aside from the surprise party I was holding off telling her about until the last minute.
"Surprise party?"
"Whoops."
"You'd better be joking."
"Tell that to Ridley and Link."
"Yeah, the surprise is there isn't going to be a party."
"Just open the box."
She glared at me and opened the box, and more light came pouring out, even though the gift had nothing to do with that. Her face softened, and I knew I was off the hook about the party. It was that thing about girls and jewelry. Who knew? Link was right, after all. She held up a necklace, delicate and shining, with a ring hanging from the chain. It was a carved gold circle, three strands of gold, sort of rose-colored and yellow and white, all braided into a wreath.
"Ethan, I love it."
She kissed me about 100 times, and I started talking even while she was kissing me, because I felt like I had to tell her before she put it on, before something happened.
"It belonged to my mom. I got it out of her old jewelry box."
"Are you sure about this?" she asked.
I nodded. I couldn't pretend like it wasn't a big deal. Lena knew how I felt about my mom. It was a big deal. And I felt relieved that we both could admit it.
"It's not rare or anything, like a diamond or whatever, but it's valuable to me. I think she'd be okay with me giving it to you because, you know."
"What?"
"Ah, you're gonna make me spell it out?"
My voice sounded weird, all shaky.
"I hate to break it to you, but you're not that great at spelling."
She knew I was squirming, but she was going to make me say it. I preferred our silent mode of communication, It made talking, real talking, a lot easier for a guy like me. I brushed her hair off of the back of her neck and attached the necklace at the clasp. It hung around her neck, sparkling in the light, right above the one she never took off. "Because you're really special to me."
"How special?"
"I think you're wearing the answer around your neck."
"I'm wearing a lot of things around my neck."
I touched her charm necklace. It all looked like junk, and most of it was, the most important junk in the world. And now it had become my junk, too. A flattened penny with a hole in it from one of those machines at the food court across from the movie theater where we had gone on our first date. A piece of yarn from the red sweater she had worn to go parking at the water tower, which had become an inside joke between us. The silver button I had given her for luck at the disciplinary meeting. My mom's little paperclip star.
"Then you should already know the answer."
She leaned in to kiss me again, a real kiss. This was the kind of kiss that couldn't really be called a kiss, the kind that involves arms and legs and necks and hair, the kind where the quilt finally slides down to the floor, and in this case, the windows unshatter themselves, the bureau rights itself, the clothes return to their hangers, and the freezing cold room is finally warm. A fire burst into flame in the small, cold fireplace in her room, which was nothing compared to the heat running through my body. I felt the electricity, stronger than what I'd become used to, and my heartbeat quickened. I pulled back, out of breath.
"Where's Ryan when you need her? We're really going to have to figure out what to do about that."
"Don't worry, she's downstairs." She pulled me back down, and the fire in the grate crackled even louder, threatening to overpower the chimney with smoke and flame.
"Jewelry. I'm telling you, it's a thing.
And love. And maybe danger."
"Coming, Uncle Macon."
Lena turned to me and sighed. "I guess we can't put it off any longer. We have to go down there and see my family." She stared at the door. The bolt unlocked itself. I rubbed her back, making a face. It was over. The day had turned to dusk by the time we made it out of Lena's room. I had thought we'd have to sneak down to visit kitchen around lunchtime, but Lena simply closed her eyes and a room service cart rolled through the door and into the middle of her room. I guess even kitchen was feeling sorry for her today. Either that, or kitchen couldn't resist Lena's newfound powers any more than I could. I ate my weight in chocolate chip pancakes drenched in chocolate syrup, washed down with chocolate milk. Lena had a sandwich and an apple. Then everything dissolved back into kissing. I think we both knew this could be the last time we lay around in her room like this. It seemed like there was nothing else we could do. The situation was what it was, and if today was all we had, then at least we would have this. In reality, I was as terrified as I was exhilarated, but still, it wasn't even dinner time, and it was already the best and worst day of my life. I grabbed Lena's hand as we headed down the stairs. It was still warm, which was how I could tell Lena was in a better mood. The necklaces sparkled at her neck, and silver and gold candles hung in the air as we walked through them and beneath them down the stairs. I wasn't used to seeing Ravenwood looking so festive and full of light, which for a second made it feel almost like a real birthday, where the people celebrating are happy and lighthearted. For a second. Then I saw Macon and Aunt Dell. They were both holding candles, and behind them, Ravenwood was shrouded in shadows and darkness. There were other dark figures moving in the background, also holding candles. Worse, Macon and Dell were dressed in long, dark robes, like acolytes of a strange order, or druid priests and priestesses. It just didn't seem like, well, a birthday party. More like a really creepy funeral.
"Happy Sweet 16.
No wonder you didn't want to come out of your room. Now you see what I was talking about.
When Lena reached the last stair, she paused and looked back at me. She looked so out of place in her old jeans and my oversized Jackson High hoodie. I doubted Lena had ever dressed like this in her whole life. I think she just wanted to keep a piece of me with her as long as she could.
Don't be scared. It's just the binding, to keep me safe until moonrise. The claiming can't happen until the moon is high.
I'm not scared, El.
I know. I was talking to myself.
She let go of my hand and took the last step down from the landing. When her foot touched the polished black floor, she was transformed. The flowing dark robes of the binding now hid the curves of her body. The black of her hair and the black of the robes blended into a shadow that covered her from head to toe, with the exception of her face, which was as pale and luminescent as the moon itself. She touched her throat, my mother's gold ring still hanging at her neck. I hoped it would help to remind her that I was there with her, just as I hoped it was my mom who had been trying to help us all along.
What are they going to do to you? This isn't going to be some freaky pagan sex thing, is it?
Lena burst out laughing. Aunt Del looked over at her, horrified. Reese smoothed her robe primly with one hand, looking superior, while Ryan started to giggle.
"Compose yourself," Macon hissed.
Larkin, somehow managing to look as cool in a black robe as he did in a leather jacket, snickered. Lena smothered the giggles down into the folds of her robe. As their candles moved, I could see the faces nearest to me, Macon, Del, Lena, Larkin, Reese, Ryan, and Barkley. There were also faces that were less familiar. Aurelia, Macon's mother, and an older face, wrinkled and tanned. But even from where I stood or tried to stand, she looked enough like her granddaughter that I instantly knew who she was. Lena saw her at the same time I did.
"Grandma! Happy birthday, sweetheart!"
The circle broke, briefly, as Lena ran over to fling her arms around the white-haired woman.
"I didn't think you would come."
"Of course I did. I wanted to surprise you. Barbados is an easy trip. I was here in the blink of an eye."
"She means that literally, right? What is she, another traveler? An incubus like Macon?"
"A frequent flyer, Ethan. On United." I could feel what Lena was feeling, a brief moment of relief, even if I was only feeling stranger and stranger. Okay, so my dad was certifiable, and my mom was dead, sort of, and the woman who raised me knew a thing or two about voodoo. I was okay with all of that. It was just standing there, surrounded by the actual card-carrying, candle-bearing, robe-wearing casters, it felt like I needed to know about a lot more than living with Amma had prepared me for, before they started in with all the Latin and the casting. Macon stepped forward in the circle.
"Too late."
He held his candle high.
"Cur luna hac vinctum convenimus."
Aunt Del stepped up next to him. Her candle flickered as she raised it, translating,
"Why on this moon do we come together for the binding?"
The circle responded, holding high their candles as they chanted,
"Sextus decima luna, sextus decimo anno, illa capietur."
Lena answered them in English. Her candle flared up until the flames almost seemed like they would burn her face.
"On the 16th moon, the 16th year, she will be claimed."
Lena stood in the center of the circle with her head high. The candlelight was cast across her face from all directions. Her own candle began to burn into a strange green flame.
"What's going on, El?"
"Don't worry. This is just part of the binding."
If this was just the binding, I was pretty sure I wasn't ready for the claiming. Macon began the chant I remembered from Halloween, What had they called it?
Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutta la tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutta la tua est. Sanguis sanguinis mei, tutta la tua est. Blood of my blood, protection is thine.
Lena went pale. A sanguineous circle, that was it. She held the candle high over her head, closing her eyes. The green flame erupted into a massive orange-red flame, exploding from her candle to every other candle in the circle, lighting them as well.
Lena!
I shouted over the sound of the explosion, but she didn't answer. The flame sprayed up into the darkness overhead, so high I realized there couldn't be a roof, any ceiling at all in Ravenwood tonight. I threw my arm over my eyes as the fire turned hot and blinding. All I could think about was Halloween. What if it was happening all over again? I tried to remember what they were doing that night to fight off Seraphine. What had they been chanting? What had Macon's mother called it? The sanguinous. But I couldn't remember the words, didn't know the Latin, and for once I wished I had joined the Classics Club. I heard a pounding on the front door, and in an instant the flames were gone. The robes, the fire, the candles, the darkness, and the light were gone. It all just vanished. Without missing a beat, they became a regular family, standing around a regular birthday cake, singing,
"What the?
Happy birthday to you." The last few notes of the song ended as the pounding on the front door continued. A massive birthday cake, three tiers of pink, white, and silver, sat on the coffee table in the center of the parlor, along with a formal tea service and white linens. Lena blew out the candles, waving the smoke away from her face, where seconds before there had been billowing flame. Her family burst into applause. Back in my Jackson High sweatshirt and jeans, she looked like any other 16-year-old.
"That's our girl."
Grandma put down her knitting and started to cut the cake, while Aunt Dell scurried to pour the tea. Reese and Ryan carried in an enormous stack of presents, while Macon sat in his Victorian wingback chair and poured himself and Barkley a scotch.
"What's going on, Al? What just happened?"
"Someone's at the door. They're just being careful."
"I can't keep up with your family."
"Have some cake. This is supposed to be a birthday party, remember?"
The pounding on the door continued. Larkin looked up from his thick triangle of red velvet cake, Lena's favorite.
"Isn't anyone going to get the door?"
Macon brushed a crumb from his cashmere jacket, looking calmly at Larkin.
"By all means, see who it is, Larkin."
Macon looked at Lena and shook his head. She wouldn't be answering the door today. Lena nodded and leaned back into Grandma, smiling over cake like the doting granddaughter she really was. She patted the cushion next to her.
"Great. It was my turn to meet Grandma."
Then I heard a familiar voice at the door, and I knew I would rather face anyone's grandma than what was